Okay, so it's once again time for the Cinelux Hour with your hosts, Michael Gaughan, which is me, and Dennis Berger, which is him.
Hi.
And seems like John Siaka is becoming kind of a third host here by default. So, hi, John.
It's better than being a third wheel, I guess.
Oh, God, I was going to say that.
So, we've got a really good, provocative topic this week. But before we get to that, I wanted to, we're just on the far side of CES, which ironically, none of us went to this year, right?
No. No. I mean, I didn't go last year either. I'm done with CES. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think any of us miss it either.
It's just getting less and less relevant too, I think. I mean, if you go through and Samsung, LG, and Sony, that's really the only announcements that pertain to the stuff we're interested in anymore.
But I was going to, and there's no point dwelling on this, but when you think if just a few years ago, this was a home entertainment show, you know, and that's the main floor and you had a solid 3 or 4 days with that. Then there was the Venetian with all these high end and that's all gone away for the most part, except for TVs.
Yeah. The first time I ever did CES was with our guest for today's episode, Brent Butterworth. And as we were walking through, leaving the show floor, going back to the hotel, I'm like, what is this? And Brent's like, oh, this is the Tamagotchi section. You know, sort of joking that this was the weird little quirky corner of the show that was just gadgets, you know? And we can ignore that. And it's sort of like almost the entire show is the Tamagotchi section now. So
as far as stuff germane to what we do, what, if any, highlights did you see come out of the show?
For me, it was the fact that micro LED is becoming a real product. And I guess I need to define my terms here. Samsung, you know, made a big splash last year with the wall where it's got this, it's this huge modular display where literally every pixel is an LED light. So it's self-illuminating. It's scalable in terms of size, but at this point it's been this gigantic thing that was only really applicable to the commercial market. Samsung showed at this show a 75-inch version of micro LED, and I am of the opinion that is the future of television. So,
yeah, I think too. If it is gets to the point where it's truly scalable, and you just buy your Lego blocks of TVs and you build exactly the size that you want, I mean, that could be game changing for sure. You know, in, especially if the blocks are affordable. I've heard different prices for the 219-inch one from over $100,000 to over $400,000. So I'm not sure what the price actually is, but it definitely is an incredible technology if it gets to the point where, you know, it's not going to just be for jumbotrons and things like that.
Well, think about it. Just a few years ago, I think it was in 2012 or so, 55-inch OLED TV was $25,000. Now a 55-inch OLED TV is $1,500. So
yeah, I mean, the micro block technology of that seems like it would be cheaper and easier to scale. Mm-hmm. So again, I agree with Dennis. I think that could certainly point the way, especially when you think about, you know, my side of the business is installation. Carrying a 200-inch TV into somebody's house might not be practical or possible.
Possible, yeah.
But, you know, carrying a bunch of handful of small bricks that you then build on the wall like Legos, you could do that anywhere. I mean, a luxury high-rise condo. I mean, so the installation aspects of that as well are really exciting.
Okay, well, let's move on to the main topic, which is Dolby Atmos, which for a lot of people may not sound like a hot topic or anything provocative, but I think Dennis could change people's minds about that. But before we get to that, who wants to explain very briefly what Atmos is for people who may not be that familiar?
I'll take this. I think I can do it quickly. I think most people are familiar with the concepts of surround sound, in which case you've got generally three speakers, at least in terms of the home audio spectrum. You've got three speakers that sort of represent what's going on in front of you. You've got 2 to 4 speakers generally representing what goes on to the side and behind you. And then you've got your subwoofers, which create, you know, the deep bass, the boom. Dolby Atmos and a similar technology called DTS:X expand that upward. They have speakers overhead, which can be in front of you overhead, directly overhead, behind you overhead. And what makes this technology possible is something called object-based surround. where the people who are mixing the sound aren't necessarily saying, here's what's going on in the left speaker, here's what's going on in the overhead rear surround speaker, here's what's going on behind you in that speaker. No, they just take objects, audio objects, and move them around in three-dimensional space, up and down, left and right, forward and backward. And the sound systems now, Atmos and DTS:X, basically take and go, okay, here's what we need to do with the speakers to recreate that sound in three-dimensional space. Siaka, would you add anything to that?
I think also the ability, you know, where traditional surround sound, like you said, typically maxed out at 7 to 9 speakers, Atmos can have far more speakers, up to 34, which for a luxury installation, you know, in a big room can certainly make a big difference. You don't have this gaps of sound between like a single side speaker and a rear speaker where you might have, you know, 20 feet between them. You can have multiple arrays of speakers all, you know, playing different things as sent to it by the Atmos renderer. So I think that that's the other potentially big change about it, is the number of speakers that it can support.
Mm-hmm. So all of that sounds wonderful. So Dennis, explain to people why you don't like it.
Well, I actually do like it for video games. I don't like it with movies, which is a drastic change in my opinion from which I first experienced it. I heard those first audio demos and I was like, this is the most mind-blowing thing in audio. This is the game changer. This is so different. And all of the little demo clips that I heard, I was just staggered. I was blown away. And then I sat down to watch a movie and Atmos for the first time. And I was like, oh, I don't like this. I'm constantly distracted from the story. My attention is constantly being dragged away from the screen upward, which is an effect I've never really experienced with surround sound. What's going on to the side and behind me doesn't pull my attention away from the focus of what's going on the screen. But when you move into the third dimension, when you've got these really radical, discrete sound effects coming from overhead, all of a sudden, I'm not immersed in a story. I'm on a theme park ride. And that's why generally for movies, I don't like it. So my message isn't you should like it or you shouldn't like it. My message is more, if you don't like it, don't feel peer pressured into thinking you have to do this to be doing home cinema properly.
So for you, it's not really the technology, it's the mix.
Yeah, it just, there are mixes that I love, like The Last Jedi, I think is very subtle. And I think they use it mostly to define the ambient sound of the space, which is great. But with mixes like Ready Player One, I think the mix for Ready Player One is perfect for that movie, because that movie is nothing but an audiovisual demo from beginning to end. But when you take that type of mix and put it on a movie where I'm supposed to be drawn into the screen, it just doesn't work for me. It draws me out of the screen. So
I am certainly on a different side of the field on this than Dennis. I really like Dolby Atmos, and I feel like it makes movie watching far more exciting. And to me, if I'm watching a movie and I hear a helicopter fly overhead, that's not distracting. That's more immersive, because a helicopter would sound like it was flying overhead, obviously, if that's your point of view in the movie. And I mean, I can't tell you how many times that, you know, again, maybe Dennis would call it distracting. I call it like, you know, kind of a gee whiz moment where, like, you know, something streaks overhead from the front of the room to the back of the room. It's like, man, that's so cool. Or, you know, there will be some placement like the movie The Magnificent Seven, the remake. In this one scene, you're down below and there are people up overhead walking overhead. And that's, you know, what you would hear if you were that character in the movie. I mean, to me, I think it makes it a much more dynamic and exciting experience. And, you know, like Dennis said, with The Last Jedi, the movies that seem to do a really great job of it are the ones that really make the little sounds that put you into that acoustic space. You know, like I just reviewed Hunter Killer, you know, and a lot of that movie is on board a submarine where you're hearing those little buzzes and hums and ticks and things all around. That's what it would actually sound like inside of a submarine. So to me, I think it just adds wholly to the experience. And I would say it's the biggest development in home theater in the last many years, in my opinion.
Okay, we're going to pick up this ball again on the other side in just a moment after we bring our guest, Brent Butterworth, in. So everybody sit tight and we'll be back in just a moment. See you then. We're back from break and we're going to talk some more about Atmos, but first we are going to bring Brent Butterworth into the conversation. And just so you can get a sense of who Brent is, here's Dennis.
I think it would be pretty safe to say I would not be sitting here if it weren't for Brent. His work for Home Theater Magazine in the mid 90s is what inspired me to buy a copy of Word and start writing as a hobby. And then by happenstance, we became friends. And through his mentorship, I actually became a halfway decent writer at times. And through his pressuring, I turned it into a career. So Brent is, he's my hero. He is my mentor. He's my friend. And I'm happy to have him in here today.
Wow, that's as nice an introduction as I could possibly ask for.
I actually had to. I had to tone it down.
All right, get to the topic. Stop flattering.
So we were talking before you came in, we were talking about Atmos, and John was saying how much he loves it, and Dennis was saying how much he hates it. And we're going to pick up the ball from there. So Dennis, just you're like 15-second encapsulation of your position.
I think it has the potential to be awesome, but I find it really distracting, and it takes me out of the story. But I love it for video games. But I wish the guys mixing for movies would calm the heck down.
So Brent, do you have a position? Are you just a sort of an Atmos observer?
Yeah, no, I was there for all the original launch events and all that sort of thing, and as well as for DTSX. And I think it's wonderful. I think it's, you know, it's something that, look, do you need Atmos to tell a story in film? No. But, and you know, do you need Atmos to have an enjoyable home theater experience? Well, you know, I gotta say, let me just say, I have an Atmos system and I've had one for a long time. And I have I've also tested some of the Atmos sound bars. And I think on a system, it's nice, you know, a big home theater system to add Atmos is a nice thing. And, you know, you'll hear the difference, which is not the case with a lot of technologies that are touted as these wonderful things. But with soundbars, I think Atmos makes an even bigger difference. It doesn't, for technical reasons, maybe we can get into later, it doesn't give you that real distinct, for the most part, doesn't give you that real distinct overhead speaker sound, but it makes the soundbar sound a lot more like a big, you know, full 5.1 or 7.1 or whatever sound system. And I think that, to me, is really the most important development with Atmos.
Why is that, Brent? Why do you think it, why does it fail at sort of delivering the overhead experience, but why does it succeed at making the system sound bigger and more full experience?
Well, because with, so with these Atmos speakers, the so-called Atmos enabled speakers, which are the ones that point upward and they're supposed to bounce sound off of the ceiling. Those really don't work if your ear is somewhere within what I'll call sight range of the speaker itself. So there's this up-firing speaker, and basically if your ear is above the level of that speaker, you're going to hear a lot of the direct sound from the speaker as opposed to the bounced sound, reflected sound from the speaker. And so you're going to start to zero in, your ear is going to hear, and that sound will hit your ear first before the bounce sound does. And so your ear thinks, you know, your ear is has evolved to prefer the sound, you know, to the reference sound is the one that hits your ear first. So it basically kind of ignores a lot of the reflected sound. So if this, but, and you know, with normal Atmos systems, it's no problem. You got a pair of tower speakers or whatever, and you can put those Atmos enabled speakers nice and high, so they're above your eye height, and they, and you don't hear the direct sound from them so much. But with soundbars, soundbars are usually mounted kind of low, like beneath your TV or maybe on top of a TV stand. And so the upfiring drivers, you can always see where the driver is, unless you really put the bar up high, which is, no one's going to really do that. I've tried it, but you know, no one's going to do that. It's not realistic. So basically what's happening is you're getting a lot less of the reflected sound and a lot more of the direct sound. That's not true. That's not as, that's true with the front soundbar. With the soundbars that have 5.1 that have rear speakers, you can get those speakers up high enough to where you get more of the reflected sound and it starts to work better. But I think with all the, I've tried three of these. I've tried two Vizios and one Samsung, and all of them have a really nice, big, enveloping sound effect that you just don't normally get from a soundbar. And it does it without all these, with some of the soundbars that have come out, you know, in the past that have tried to make a big, enveloping sound. They've had a lot of weird sonic artifacts. They sound kind of phasey and kind of,
and you can't move your head when you're listening.
You can't move
to
your head. It's sweet yeah. spotty, and it just basically, except in a couple cases, it doesn't work very well. And with this, you get a big enveloping and exciting sound, you know, without the sonic artifacts. And of course, you know, you're throwing a couple more speaker drivers and a couple more amplifiers into the mix. So that's going to kick your maximum level up by a few decibels. And with these kind of systems, a few decibels is a big difference.
I think you put everybody else to sleep.
Sorry, was it that boring?
No,
I wasn't expecting that. And it sort of solves Dennis's concerns about too much going on in the height channels.
Brent, we talked a little earlier before you joined us about Atmos mixes that we kind of liked and Atmos mixes that we kind of didn't. Do you have any favorites and do you have any least favorites?
Well, you know, honestly, I'm highly influenced by my friend John's online blog about that. He did about, I think, what, a year or two ago, talking about his favorites. And one of his favorites is my favorite too. It's the scene from, it's like Divergent Insurgent or something like that. I get these titles mixed up. It's the movie with the cute blonde girl that has like the short kind of pixie cut. And you know what I'm talking about?
It's definitely Divergent. And it might have been, there were a few of the movies in that series.
It's the last of the three. It's
maybe Allegiant?
Climax. No, I think it's got like a picture of her with a gun on the front.
That's every one of them.
That one. Okay.
It's the last in the series. Anyway, so she meets, you know, this Kate Winslet character who's the big boss. And so she's in this room, this like glass, this big glass room, and it's very reflective, the sound inside there. And so Kate Winslet is talking to her from a control room. And so when you see Kate Winslet's head and Kate Winslet speaking, you get the acoustics of the control room, which are very dead. And then when it cuts to the blonde girl, I think her name's like Charlene Woodley or something. That's
Shailene.
Yeah, okay. So whatever her name is in the movie, when it cuts to her perspective and she's in this big glass room, it's this giant, huge, echoing sound. And with the height speakers, it really creates a realistic sound of a big, giant, reflective room. And to go back and forth and to get it from like the villain's perspective and the heroine's perspective, sonically, it really helps to tell the story. I think also, what's the movie? What is that thing? I'm not good with these movies. It's the one about the oil rig and
Deepwater Horizon.
That was it.
Is that the one with Marky Mark in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
Funky Bunch.
I think he's switched his name, but he's in it. And so, but it's about, you know, that oil rig explosion, and that's a DTS:X mix. And that's really good. It's more like just a big enveloping and exciting sound as opposed to a lot of really discrete effects. But it sounds great. It sounds really exciting. So yeah, so those are my favorites. I mean, I haven't done any video games in Atmos, and I'm really interested in that. I'm going to move forward with that right away. And
this is sarcasm, ladies and gentlemen.
Two things real quick. One, I want to put a completely gratuitous plug in there for John's write-up on Deepwater Horizon, because it's on the Cinelux site. So check that out if somebody's looking for a demo scene.
And not to ever want to correct Brent, but the home disc only includes an Atmos mix. It you can't get DTS:X.
Oh, really? Home.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times things will be mixed in multiple formats theatrically, and depending on what the cinema can do, but the disc only has the Atmos mix.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the other thing is, I wanted to talk just for a second about awareness of Atmos, because, you know, 5.1, you know, I think it took time, but most theaters had it. After a while, people were familiar with it. They saw it in relatively simple setups at home. Atmos, just in terms of awareness, seems to be a different challenge, because it's very hard for people outside of urban areas, major urban areas, to experience an Atmos cinema. And I don't think there's that many setups at home. So is it mainly a branding exercise, or what needs to happen to raise awareness here?
Where I live in Myrtle Beach, I don't believe there's an Atmos theater within 3 hours of me. And so the awareness of it here is very limited. When people come into my showroom, unless they're like really hardcore, you know, technology nuts, when I ask them, have you ever heard Dolby Atmos or heard of it? The vast majority of time is no, I haven't. And just one other thing I'd like to interject, we were talking in the break before kind of about where Dennis and I stand on this. Without any kind of hyperbole, Dennis is literally the only person that I've ever heard say they don't like it. Every demo that I've ever given in my showroom, people are like, well, gosh, I don't want that one. You know, speaking about, you know, the basic 5-channel presentation. So, I mean, for the majority of people, it is an incredible development. And like Brent said, where there are some technologies where you're wondering, I think I hear this, with Atmos, there's no question about it. You know, when a helicopter is hovering directly over your head, you don't have to wonder if you heard it or not. I mean, so from a demo standpoint, from, you know, a sales standpoint, it's easy to show it to somebody and not have them wonder like, well, gosh, could they appreciate that the red was this or that the sound floor was that? I mean, it's like, yeah, did you hear that over your head? That's Atmos. And it's like, oh, okay.
Watching a film and getting an AV demo are very different experiences for me. So I was on board with the demo. It was when I sat down and tried to get immersed in a story that I realized, oh, crap, this thing that I thought was the most amazing thing in the world is really pulling me out of this experience. So,
can I just say one thing? In reading your story, your post, you put that it triggers something in your primate brain, a fight or flight mechanism. And the first thing that I thought was, Atmos sounds so real that Dennis can't even watch a movie because he thinks he's literally under attack. And I'm like, it was kind of like a backhanded perfect compliment of that's how good Atmos is. It's like, I can't watch the movie because I'm afraid something's attacking me from overhead.
Well, it's not that I'm afraid something is attacking me. It's that something in my brainstem, some subconscious part of my brain thinks I'm under attack, you know? It's very different from the conscious experience, but you know, here's the thing, and here's what I want to reiterate again: if you like that, I am not in any way saying you're wrong. What I'm rebelling against is the notion that if you don't like this, then you're doing home cinema wrong. That's what bothers me more than anything. It's just the pressure for everybody to adapt this, or somehow you're just selling your experience short. So
let me ask you this. Would you say that a modern luxury home theater would have to have Dolby Atmos?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think me and
Brent, why not? I really think that this is a great thing and you should have it. And, you know, except for a few outliers, you know, most people are going to like Atmos, and you know, and the fact of the matter is, most of the people that listen to it, you know, your home theater enthusiast who puts it in is going to be like, wow, this is awesome. There's speakers above my head, and it's more enveloping, and blah blah. what most of the people that listen to it are never going to notice it. There are people, when you have average people go in and listen to an Atmos home theater system, they're not going to go, wow, the sound is over my head. They're going to go like, wow, that's really cool. Here's the big problem with things like Atmos and all these technologies that people are trying to throw out there now. If you're a theater owner, you can tell people, oh, I have Atmos or I have DTS:X or whatever. But these theater owners are also kind of making up their own brands. You know, I know there's a theater in Houston by where my mom lives that has, I don't know, super ginormous extreme something sound, and they just made their own, who knows what it is, they made their own trailer for it. It's like, it's a whatever Palladium Theater is exclusive, you know, and right. It could be nothing. They could have done absolutely nothing. Who knows? Who's to know? And so anyway, you know, there's so much sort of, literally and figuratively speaking, noise out there in terms of promoting these different sound technologies. But if you put in a beer tap and some comfy seats, everyone understands exactly what that is. So, or, you know, God, even if you just had like good coffee in your theater, which would cost you nothing, and you'd make a fortune because you charge $4 a cup. there's a draw for you.
There you go.
How many theaters have even tolerable coffee? Almost none of them.
I've never.
How many of us have ever gone to a movie and gotten a coffee?
I've never heard of coffee at a movie. That's a thing.
Well, but you have you live in Alabama. I mean, this is Los Angeles, man. This is a different level of sophistication.
It's 8 o'clock at night. Brew me up a cup.
Okay, and on that note, we've got to close out this segment so we can get to the next one. But let's take a breath, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are back from break. The one thing I want to throw out there, because I know Brent has a lot of experience with the luxury segment of the home entertainment market, primarily through Rob Report, right?
Yeah, and I worked on a magazine called Rob Report Home Entertainment, which Dennis worked on also, that was focused mostly on high-end home theater, high-end home automation, and some luxury audio gear. And then working for Rob Report, we covered a lot of luxury audio gear. So, and by that, I mean products like, if you're familiar with like the D'Agostino amplifiers and stuff that's really like, you know, really expensive audio gear that's not so weird that people can't figure out. If you go to these audio shows, there's a lot of expensive gear and it's so weird and wacky that, you know, no non-enthusiast would buy it. So we covered a lot of the D'Agostino type stuff and the Wilson speakers and the sort of big, really super fancy, you know, the Porsche and Ferrari of audio gear, if you will.
Right. Right. So here's what I wanted to throw out there. And because Dennis and I have been talking about this, and if anybody disagrees, let me know. But it seems like a lot of stuff that would have been considered high end, at least, if not luxury, is moving towards the middle market now. What's going on with, you know, video displays and the performance of the TVs and things like that. And when you look at what's going on with control systems and all of that, there isn't the differentiation with performance and build and sophistication between the market segments that there used to be. So assuming that's true, and Dennis, you may want to help amplify that thought, but assuming that's true, what makes for a luxury entertainment system? What are the things that are going to differentiate it?
You know, I mentioned earlier that I got a new TV, 75-inch TV, and it's definitely what you would consider to be like a more of a budget-oriented TV. And the performance, quite honestly, just blows me away. It's utterly staggering how amazing this thing looks for the money. But I think one of the things that sets it apart is there's no wire and cable management. You know, it's hard to really sort of integrate this thing into... it would be hard to integrate it into a much nicer looking environment than what I have. I don't have a luxury home, so it's fine, but you can't hide the wires and things like that. And when the TV is off, it's just this big imposing monolith of a thing. And I think where you're seeing a lot of differentiation is in terms of design niceties and things like that. It's not the whole story, but I think it's a big part of the story. Having a display that looks as good when it's off as it does when it's on, that's a big differentiator between the sort of mass market consumer level product and the more luxurious product.
Okay, my turn.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I would say it's going in two different directions. You know, certainly on the custom installation side, you know, where you go hire somebody to put your theater in for you, it's moved a lot more in the direction like Dennis is talking about, where it's more about concealing the theater, and you get more into the whole media room thing where you can hit a button and your whole, and you know, screen comes down and sound system's all built into the walls and all that sort of thing. And it's pretty transparent, and you don't have to deal with a bunch of, you get really fantastic performance without dealing with a bunch of weird gear and a bunch of stuff that no one in the family can work besides you. On the other side of it, it's gotten more into what I was talking about briefly before, which is the real, the sort of classic luxury goods thing, more analogous to luxury watches than to necessarily a higher level of performance. I mean, and the new D'Agostino amps are, I don't mean to keep pumping them, but they're emblematic of all this sort of thing. You know, they have a $250,000 pair of amplifiers now that weigh, I think, 425 pounds a piece. And they put out, they could put out as much as 6,000 watts if you have them connected to like, you put like a dryer outlet, you know, like a 220 outlet for each amplifier to deliver its maximum rated performance. And these things have many thousands of dollars worth of metalwork in the chassis and everything. So, you know, they're gorgeous products. I mean, they're a statement. They're a statement in the same way that a Bugatti is a statement.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing about the D'Agostino stuff is I hesitate to say this because it seems like a pejorative, but it's not. They're very geeky, man. They're very steampunk, you know? And I think a lot of more affluent people these days are geeks. And I think there's just something about their very sort of, you know, a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen look of their stuff that's very, very appealing. So,
you know, if someone walks in and you've got those amplifiers, you're one of the, you know, few dozen people in the world who has those amplifiers probably. That's a big deal. If you have any D'Agostino amplifier or any of the, you know, Boulder or Constellation, these big sort of statement amplifiers, and then you have the Wilson Audios and people like that, and these big statement speakers, these big tall speakers they have automotive finishes and all these kind of crazy looking designs. So on that level, it's a status symbol, and it's more like a watch where the $100,000 watch doesn't tell time any better than the $10 watch, and if even as good. But you know, it's something you buy because you have lots of money and you want to buy yourself nice things.
So let's go to our close real quick. So we've wrapped this discussion up. We're going to take one last break, and we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. First off, thank you, Brent. It was great to have you here.
Thanks. It's great to be on with you guys.
Great. We've officially pulled you into the Cinelux universe now.
I'm a member of the tribe. It's a great feeling.
Good. Please come back.
I will.
Okay. All right. As usual, I'm going to throw a two-parter, but really quick answers on this. First part of the question is, name a movie from the past 10 years that people, or whatever we evolve to in 100 years, will still be watching 100 years from now.
I think Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Something from the last 10 years that'll stand the test of time.
I think The Last Jedi. I'm going to stand by that.
I'm going to say Toy Story 3. I think that show and the emotional connection to childhood, I think that is timeless.
So last 10 years?
Yeah.
Boy, man, you're really asking the wrong guy. I don't these movies just enter my psyche and then immediately leave.
I think for Brent, it's the Insurgent movie. He's really drawn into that one.
Well, you never know, but I would guess probably some great drama that's really emblematic of you know, today's you know, culture and struggle and whatever. So I would say maybe
I know that that's the problem for me, is there one?
What is the Citizen Kane of the last 10 years?
Hey, Brent, I am just digging back through my text messages from you, and I got a text message from you from the night that you walked out of the theater after seeing Star Wars The Last Jedi, and here's what you said verbatim.
Yeah, what?
Best one since the one with the little bears. What else do you need to say besides that?
All right, look, I liked it, but still, I don't think that, you know, it's a cultural artifact from, you know, we don't look back on a lot of the old sci-fi movies, a few here and there from the
Metropolis. 50s, but, come on.
Yeah. Okay. But only a few. And most of those are just, God, there were so many sci-fi movies. Gosh, guys, I wish you had told me that I'd be facing this question. You know, in advance, because this is not easy. If you said to me, you know, best audio product of the last 10 years, maybe I'd come up with something right away. But, you know, best jazz album of the last 10 years, but best, you know, best movie.
Yeah, but that was kind of my point, is I don't think there is anything that's going to survive the test of time. I think that
Star Wars.
My feeling, I know this is not a popular opinion, I think the only thing that's going to live from the film era is ultimately going to be silent films, because they're the only thing that in a very simple way convey what the culture was without a lot of fads and everything else. I think sound kind of screwed it all up. And if you look at something like The General or the early comedy shorts or whatever, they're still as funny now as when they were made, and they will always be funny because they work on a very, very simple and direct level. And I just think we've gotten so many things with gimmicks and effects and everything else, it's just not going to, doesn't mean anything 10 years from now. It's going to mean even less 100 years from now, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I have to agree with you, but I'm just thinking of some great, you know, character study type of movie, like, you know, like a, I don't know, like Remains of the Day or something that, you know, that was like 30 years ago, but, what's the Citizen Kane of now? There must be one, but the fact that we can't come up with it right away means maybe there's not.
Well, I think, boy, I'm getting, and this last thing I'm going to say about it, because it's going to start running long, but I just think movies started feeding on themselves at a certain point. They stopped being about other things and started being about themselves. And I think once you get beyond the present moment, that's not going to mean a lot to people. And I think that's one of the reasons why there hasn't been a big, big, you know, culturally significant movie. Anybody else? Or are we there?
I think we're there. That's all of us.
Okay, Brent, I didn't mean to stump you, but you actually sort of underlined where I was going with it. So,
oh, well, good. I'm glad to help. But I'm the kind of guy who loves to always have the right answer. So,
okay, that was fun. Great. Thanks, everybody. And I think that's a wrap for now. But we'll talk to everybody soon.
Thanks, Brent.
Bye.
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 Okay.